Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting to you live from New Zealand, the allegedly least corrupt country in the world that is also the second largest mention in 11 million documents released in the Panama Papers and got mentioned like 64,000 times as a place where money launderers launder their money. With that, uncorrupt, ladies and gentlemen. Or, more properly, we're the best in the world at concealing our corruption from the rest of you people. Now, my very special guests are from Australia and the UK, respectively, and today we're going to be talking about fluoride in particular, New Zealand's new law that it's planning on passing to make it a finable offence to not forcibly medicate the population with dangerous, hazardous chemicals in the water supply. Maybe I'm summing it up a little bit too fast or whatever, but that's what a shock jock is here to do. Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Network, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny.
And also Maria Claudianos, I hope I pronounced that correctly, from Australia. Maria, welcome.
Thank you. Yes, thanks very much.
All right. Now, for those of us who are actually unfamiliar with the legislation, who would like to break it down for us and what New Zealanders are actually facing with this new kind of affront by the fluoride lobby?
Yes, well, I would break it down this way, that the activists who have been working against fluoridation diligently for a number of years with success have become the victims of their own success. Instead of the government allowing democracy to take its place and to continue and allow communities to decide whether or not they're going to fluoridate, personally, I think only the individual should be able to decide whether they take fluoride into their body. But at least you get a little bit closer to democracy when communities decide. Now the government wants to give the authority to fluoridate over to the district health boards, bureaucrats. And it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, because basically the district health boards are going to follow the directions of the Ministry of Health. So basically what you're looking at is mandatory fluoridation in New Zealand by stealth. And of course, that's got some communities like Christchurch and Nelson that have never been fluoridated, have wonderful water. In Christchurch, they don't even have to add chlorine. It got them very, very upset thinking about what it's going to mean to have the government force fluoridation onto them after resisting it for decades.
And Maria, similar measures being passed in Australia, or is there any precedent for this kind of mass medication type thing?
Yes, there is. There is. Sorry to interrupt, Maria. I had to go back. There is a precedent. Ireland has had mandatory fluoridation since the 1960s. 73% of the population is now drinking fluoridated water. Singapore has mandatory fluoridation. Israel has been backwards and forwards with mandatory fluoridation. The last Minister of Health stopped the mandatory fluoridation, but the new Minister of Health wants to instigate it again. So there are very few countries in the world that actually fluoridate, number one, and even fewer that have mandatory fluoridation for pretty obvious reasons. I mean, most countries don't take lightly to having the government force them to drink medication.
Unless, of course, the government is adept at running propaganda campaigns and making people think that forcing you to take something is actually not only your choice, but good for the community and community values and so on and so forth. You go through this whole repertoire. Now, I'm also aware that maybe for the first time, people may not be aware of you two, who you are and what you do. I'd like to briefly get your, you know, backgrounds and so on and so forth so that people know who they're listening to. Maria, would you start, please?
Sure. I'm actually a dentist, and I've been a dentist since when I graduated, which was in 2003. In my career, I've worked in both fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas in Australia. And during that time, I was never comfortable with the idea of the forced medication scenario that fluoridation basically is doing to the citizens of wherever the place is. And I thought it was highly unethical. But when I actually saw that there was not very significant difference between areas that were fluoridated and non-fluoridated as far as what I saw in, you know, the amounts of decay, regardless of whether it was a low socioeconomic background or a high socioeconomic background, there was really nothing outstanding to me saying that there was a major difference between the fluoridated and non-fluoridated areas. So that reinforced my ambition to get the message out there that I don't believe fluoridation is all that it was cracked out to be. I don't believe that it has helped. And I think that there are some serious risks when you look at the research, especially in modern times, that, you know, fluoridation is basically putting people's health at risk, really, because you can't control the dose that someone ingests every day. And that's where I'm coming from. But I still practice dentistry. I'm a general dentist, and essentially I'm just helping get that message out there.
And I'm sure that's actually good for your patients as well, coming in, hearing a dentist say, you know, fluoride's not all it's cracked up to be. You see that white mottling on your teeth there, that that fluorosis, that's caused by the fluoride, and it's kind of almost as bad as tooth decay when you look at it, isn't it?
At university, we were taught that exactly what dental fluorosis was. I think, you know, going back 50, 40 years earlier, I don't think it was as much appreciated. And there are certainly, there have been dentists who weren't aware of how to detect fluorosis. There are different forms of it, but essentially it is the damaged crystalline structure of tooth enamel when there has been too much fluoride ingested during that developmental time of the enamel. So I don't go into conversations with all my patients. I leave that up for the patient to ask me those questions. However, I will point out in a dental exam to a parent or to the patient themselves if they do have fluorosis so that they can understand how to best manage that and how to avoid further degradation of their teeth.
Now, Dr. Paul Cornett, if you would please give the audience a little bit of introduction about yourself, who you are and what you do.
I'm a retired professor of chemistry. I retired in 2006. I first got involved in fluoridation in 1996 at the request of my wife. I didn't want the issue. I thought that people opposed to fluoridation were Looney Tunes. But when I started to read the literature, I realized that they weren't. They hadn't confused fluoride with fluorine, a compound of containing fluorine with the element fluorine. They hadn't done that. And the thing that struck me so much 21 years ago was just how active fluoride is. It's a very reactive biological species as far as biology is concerned. The lowly fluoride ion that I perceived rather like common salt, comparing common salt with chlorine, you can compare fluoride with fluorine gas. It's very different chemically, but biologically it's very, very active. And the central fact, which I've nurtured now for 21 years and shared with everybody I can, is how low the level is in mother's breast milk. It's extremely low. Now, this means that if fluoride is supposed to be good for you, if the dentists think it's good for teeth, then what they are saying is that every woman is deficient in fluoride on this planet. They're all deficient because there's so little in mother's milk, 0.004 parts per million, according to the National Research Council, in the United States, 0.004 parts per million. To put that into perspective, if you fluoridate in New Zealand about 0.8, 0.9, somewhere around that region, your baby is, and you make up formula with tap water, as millions do, you're going to give your baby about 200 times more fluoride than nature intended. And that's only the beginning of this story. So we've actually got two stories here, both important. One is there's no known use for fluoride inside. The argument how valuable it is to the source of the teeth, but there's no argument that anything useful inside the body, there's not one biological molecule, one process which needs fluoride to function properly. That's one set of facts. The other set of facts is it's extremely dangerous to biology. Fluoride interferes with hydrogen bonds, with metal ions, with enzymes, with G proteins. And there's a whole review article by Barbier from 2010 or 12. I've forgotten the date at the moment. But it's very toxic. And therefore, you understand why nature has kept it away from the newborn baby and how utterly reckless it is for people to put it in the drinking water, where inevitably people are exposed to it. And as Maria has said, once you put a medicine, any medicine, but including fluoride, into the drinking water, you can't control the dose. You can't control who gets it. It goes to everybody. It's totally indiscriminate. Those two things should knock it out right there from a pharmaceutical point of view. And then lastly, it violates the individual's right to informed consent. No government has the right to force an individual to take medicine. It's enshrined in various human rights laws, international human rights. You're not allowed to experiment on people. This whole thing is ludicrous. It's bizarre. And to make it even more bizarre, instead of using pharmaceutical grade fluoride, that you kind of thing you get in your toothpaste, they're using a hazardous waste product of the phosphate fertilizer industry, which contains all kinds of contaminants, including, for some sources, trace amounts of radioactive isotopes. Again, every way you look at this practice, it is foolish.
Now, you say that it's not pharmaceutical grade. Now, I want to back up this just a little bit here, because I understand that there is a number of educated people that listen to this show, people who have been listening to me for years and years about all sorts of issues. But as soon as I bring up fluoride, they go, Vinny, you're all of a sudden crazy. Right? And this is the block wall that we're dealing with. And I want to understand your thought process when you went from that specifically, because you used to think that people who question fluoride were Looney Tunes themselves. How did that thought process change from that to what you're doing now? I mean, specifically, did you have to reevaluate yourself? Did it destroy your belief systems? Did you go through some kind of like shock or difficult in faith in the system? Anything like that?
Absolutely. It's changed my whole perspective on society. I mean, if you want an education, get involved with fluoridation. You'll get one hell of an education. And it's a disturbing and upsetting education. And that is, you can't trust your government health agencies in fluoridated countries. You can't trust the Ministry of Health in New Zealand, in Australia, in England, in Ireland, in Canada, in the United States. They're all lying through their teeth when it comes to fluoridation. And it's partly this, you know, you could see this as incredibly evil and they've got some horrible purpose in it. But in a sense, it's the banality of evil. When policy is king, Vinny, science becomes a slave. And it's a very horrible experience of trying to deal with individuals, with professional bodies and health agencies when science is no longer king, when science has become a slave. And the simplest way to explain a lot of the silly things which are happening with this practice in New Zealand, in Australia, and America and other countries, the few countries that practice fluoridation, 97% of Europe does not, thank God, is that the simplest way to explain is they're working backwards. For some reason, this policy of fluoridation has to be protected. Let me give you an example of where you see a policy having to be protected. In 2014, in this country, the Department of Health here, Ministry of Health, chose two very prestigious people, Sir Peter Gluckman. 600 papers, just recently was given some prestigious award. And Sir David Skegg, head of the Royal Society of New Zealand. Oh my gosh, these people just drip credentials. And I think from the New Zealand's point of view, probably integrity. They were given onerous time reviewing the safety of fluoridation, looking at the literature on fluoridation. And when I read their review from 2014, I nearly fell off my chair because the first thing I went to was their review of neurotoxicity. Let me back off a second. There are over 300 studies which indicate that fluoride is neurotoxic, over 100 animal studies, 50 IQ studies, 50 out of 57 studies shows that young children exposed to fluoride have lowered IQ from those that are not exposed to fluoride or more fluoride and so on. Now, they said there have been reports of studies from China talking about lowered IQ. But they said, and they referred now to the meta-analysis from Harvard, the reduction in IQ was less than one IQ point, less than one IQ point. And it was probably an artifact and of no practical significance. I said, oh my God, these prestigious people, they haven't read this paper. They haven't read this review. What they're reviewing is a propagandist interpretation of that. And the mistake that was made early on, which confused half a standard deviation with half an IQ point. So a lot of the promoters are going around saying that the IQ drop in these Chinese studies is only half an IQ point, when in fact it was half a standard deviation, which is seven IQ points. Now, that was bad enough. It was bad enough for Sir Peter Gluckman and Sir David Skegg to put their names to this piece of junk. But then when they went to correct it, it was because they were made a laughing stock by the New Zealand fan people, the fluoride-free New Zealand people pointed this out. So they made a correction. But guess what they did? They changed less than one IQ point in the original to less than one standard deviation. They didn't even pay the courtesy to the ordinary person of explaining what half a standard deviation was, less than one standard deviation. They didn't explain that that was seven IQ points, which is outrageous. That's the first thing. But the second thing is they didn't change the rest of the sentence. The rest of the sentence read before, less than one IQ point of an artifact of no practical significance, they change it to less than one standard deviation and leave the sentence intact. This is an artifact, no practical significance. My God, a loss of seven IQ points in a population would easily halve the number of geniuses in your society and easily double the number of mentally handicapped. No practical significance? I mean, this is taken possibly, are given the benefit of a doubt of a genuine mistake and taken it to crude propaganda. Crude propaganda. And that's practice. It's used it, taking prestigious people with titles and made the puppets for crap. Absolutely unadulterated scientific crap. I will now tell you what I really think.
Well, when you get into a profession, you go through the process of indoctrination into that profession of any kind, whether you be a dentist or a professor of toxicology or a talk radio show host, you become part of a group of different people with you identify with. And when you start to question the main narrative of that particular industry, you then get the, I don't know if it's chastisement or persecution or what the right word is to it, but your colleagues don't seem to understand that you've come to a conclusion based upon looking at the evidence in many cases, and they don't come around. And it does indeed have a emotional impact, and it can lead in many activists to depression and feelings of helplessness and rage against not only the people around them in their own professions, but also against themselves. Now, I wonder if this, if there's a connection here between fluoride lowering IQ and fluoridated populations supporting fluoridation. You know, like, has it made you just a little bit less bright that you can't see the truth about fluoridation because it's working that effectively, you know?
Well, I think people can feel more apathetic about, you know, anything, really, when they feel suppressed in some way, whether it's being just chronically fatigued or just a little bit tired, not much time to spend thinking about things or even discussing issues or reading new ideas. People would rather just not have to find that stress in anything controversial in their lives. I must say that in my time and experience with this issue of fluoridation and speaking to people at levels of government, I was quite surprised to come to this realization that there are many people who are going to act accordingly depending on the situation that they're in. And that means that if they truly believe that something is not right, that doesn't mean that they will express that belief when they are performing their job or activity or behavior that they're meant to do. So it's very hard for even people in positions of power or authority or perceived positions of power or authority where changes should be made. Those people in those positions often tend to not be able to express what they truly think and believe for fear of, as you're talking about, some kind of discrimination or even loss of their job and their income as a result. So it's a strange political scenario which has not benefited society in one way, shape or form. I think it's quite active in ways of progression, and it certainly takes away the freedoms that we should be entitled to, our civil rights.
You see, so science depends upon truth, honesty, integrity. And when you take those away from science, then it's useless. It's useless. And when you take science away from the health, the administration of health, public health in particular, it's disastrous. And I think we'll pay a huge price for this. But I would hesitate to ascribe motivations like they are fluoridating in order to dumb down the American public or the Australian or the New Zealand public.
That's just a happy coincidence.
It's far more banal. What?
Well, that's just a happy coincidence at least.
No, I don't. I think today the big problem is the difficulty of changing a bureaucracy. You can't change it from below. Bureaucrats quickly learn that if they're going to progress in the bureaucracy, they don't make waves, which translates into obeying orders. You don't challenge policy. And I think it's very serious when policy becomes king, then science becomes a slave. That's what ultimately is happening here.
I was talking on Facebook.
People are swallowing the
The other day, and I was saying that science is about knowledge, right? The quest for truth, and religion, on the other hand, is about belief, right? One can back up what they're saying with objective evidence, right? And the other repeats itself until you stop questioning it. Now, a lot of people didn't get what I meant by that phrase, is that in many cases, science has now been turned into a religion. Certain scientific arguments actually appear to be trying to convince you that there's a hell you will go to if you don't believe it, and that there is a heaven you can achieve by believing it without question, right?
The easy life. I remember, Vinny, I was still teaching at the time. This was a couple of years before I retired before 2006. And I was crossing the quadrangle and I bumped into the Spanish teacher. And you know how you normally say, how are you, Steve? Hi, how are you? And you pass on, you know. How are you? Fine. Well, this time I actually told him the truth. He says, how are you, Paul? And I said, actually, Steve. I said, Steve, I'm feeling bloody awful. He says, what do you mean? He was really taken aback. What do you mean? I said, well, I don't want to teach chemistry anymore. What? And he's a professor of chemistry. I don't want to teach chemistry. What are you talking about? Why don't you want to teach chemistry? And I said, well, you know, I teach my students the scientific method and the importance of integrity and following the facts wherever they take them. You do the experiment first and then find out what happens. You don't, as you go with religion, you don't have a faith and work backwards to fit the facts to that faith. And so I said, you know, I want to teach the students this, but today I know that they're going to leave the classroom and they're going in which see torn up either by economic interests or by the government itself, and that is so stressing. It completely disoriented me. It took away the meaning of teaching science, as far as I'm concerned. And I think most scientists avoid this. They avoid this confrontation with society. They avoid this confrontation with authority. And in terms of how we most see it practiced every day in the religion of fluoridation is the use of endorsements. The fluoridation is endorsed by X, Y, Z, D. They are using authority in the same way as religion uses authority. You believe it because these people believe it. You don't believe it because you've actually studied it, read the papers, etc. That's a very bad way to train professionals. And if you now look at this and look at it as the dental school, look at the dental curricula of universities in the fluoridated countries. They're only getting one side of this debate, only one side of this. And it goes worse. That's dentists. Okay, they're only getting one side. That's outrageous from an academic point of view. Now take medical schools. Doctors, by and large, doctors in the fluoridated countries do not learn that there are people sensitive to fluoride. They have no idea what most doctors have no idea whatsoever what the symptoms are of someone that's very sensitive to fluoride. At one end of the normal distribution curve, response to fluoride, those people right down at the most sensitive end, doctors have no idea. So doctors now, all over the fluoridating world, are treating people with ointments and pills, what else, unable to treat these symptoms because they're not dealing with the cause. It's a serious thing.
I think there's also a lack of understanding about skeletal fluorosis.
Yeah.
And that's a huge problem. There's also a definite percentage of the population that are allergic to fluoride itself. Mm-hmm. And I actually spoke to a GP and I said, look, I think this lady needs to be tested for how much level of fluoride is in her blood plasma or tissue fluid. And can you get a test done? And there was no test available that this GP could find in Australia to be able to test the levels of fluoride in her body. So that basically was an example of how little is being taught about the medical aspects and influences and health influences that fluoride ingestion has on the human.
Vinny, we have two defenses against fluoride after the breast milk. Breast milk protects the baby, number one. But after that, mammals have two defense mechanisms. One is the kidney. The kidney excretes fluoride as much as it can. The kidney typically excretes about 50% of the fluoride from the body very quickly. And the rest, by and large, gets deposited, sequestered in the bone. I believe that's a defense mechanism, sequestering the fluoride in the hard tissues. You're getting the fluoride away from the delicate machinery, away from the enzymes, away from the proteins, away from all kinds of biological apparatus, and sequestering it in the bone. But the trouble with that, and this is what Maria is talking to when she talks about skeletal fluorosis. If you go to places in India and China, you see the kids all have dental fluorosis. And then the adults in the same village who are drinking the same water get skeletal fluorosis. And some of them very, very serious, crippling. They're bent over double. Now, in terms of a fluoridated country, you're drinking and destined in New Zealand to drink fluoridated water all your life. So all your life, every day, 50% of the fluoride is being deposited in your bone. And we know what happens. In the beginning, when the fluoride deposits in your bone and the connective tissues, you get symptoms identical to arthritis. Ding, 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 ding. You've got millions of people in New Zealand with arthritis. There's not one study in New Zealand to see if there's any relationship between the frequency, the prevalence of arthritis and how much fluoride they're exposed to. And if the fluoride continues to accumulate in the bone 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, and so on, then the bone gets harder but more brittle. And then we're worried about hip fractures in particular for the elderly.
Now, on top of that, just a little bit of language here. What does arthritis mean, ladies and gentlemen? In Latin, it means joint pain. Okay,
yeah.
It's not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah. You've got a whole bunch of toxins that are being accumulated in your bones and your joints. Your joints are going to get painful, right?
Yeah.
Asked and answered. There you go. There's a little bit of Vinnie Eastwood wisdom there for you. Now, on top of this, we talk about the industry, like the phosphate fertilizer industry. Getting rid of the slurry that comes out of these things is ridiculous. Okay, dude, ladies and gentlemen, let me just give you a picture. Imagine a pit of chemicals that you can see from space, and that you've got to get that huge amount of chemicals deposited somewhere safely so that you don't have to just keep it there in the open slurry pits, right? Okay, now you figure out two things. Firstly, you've got to dispose of it very, very carefully because it's toxic waste and it's incredibly expensive to have the mandatory protection standards and environmental regulations that govern your business. Okay, so that's not appealing to you. On the other hand, there's this vagary in the law that allows you to dump toxic waste into the human water supply if you sell it to the council first. Because then it's no longer toxic waste that's hazardous to humans. It's a product that has some kind of perceived benefit. All right. Now, being cynical and being jaded, I was told by a very good friend of mine, is one of the two greatest hallmarks for a journalist. Because that's what will happen to you if you've got your eyes open. And I saw this really great quote. It says, "When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it." That's from Frederick Bastiat. And I have got that as my Facebook profile kind of thing, because we need to be reminded that just because something is in a position of authority doesn't necessarily mean that that position of authority is justified or justifiable in its actions. But anyway, Paul, go ahead.
Oh, you asked me another question, Vinny. I'm just speechless with that. That's a great quote.
Totally.
I'm going to say it one more time. When plunder becomes a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorizes it and a moral code that glorifies it. Okay, and the man Peter Dunn comes to mind when you think about a man who plunders and a man who benefits from society looking the other way. He's been in Parliament for now 10, 15 years or so, and he is helping to push this new fluoride bill, He's got ties to the alcohol lobbies, the tobacco lobbies, and also he helped to try to usher under the rug the big Panama paper financial records leaks. Like, we're talking about a man who's got the fingerprints of corruption all over him, right? Like, the man is a walking orgy of evidence.
What about sugar? Is he involved with sugar?
One can only hope, because he'd need a hell of a lot of it to make him appear very sweet.
Because, you know, 1 year before the U.S. Public Health Service mysteriously endorsed fluoridation in 1950, remember, 1950 was bang in the middle of the trial, so no trials had been completed in 1950, and no health studies are being conducted of any significance. And U.S. Public Service, the U.S. Public Service, in fluoridation. Why? It's a mystery. It's a mystery. Obviously, political, not scientific. Well, one thing that happened before 1950 was in 1949, said, this is 133 sugar interests, the Sugar Research Foundation said, we need to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption. And the sugar lobby has been there all the time. More recent private papers indicate that the sugar lobby was playing around with the National Institute of Dental Research in the 1970s, keeping them away from researching into sugar and focusing on other things. Pretty sick. That's a $1 industry right there that's benefited all the time. And probably the most harm that fluoridation has done, is to get zillions of parents worldwide to take their eyes off keeping a control of the sugar consumption by their kids.
Or reading,
and now we're getting obesity and diabetes up the gazoo.
Well, and there's also the fact that sugar's been put into nearly every single thing on the supermarket shelves now, right? And as a dentist, Maria, right, teaching your patients about trying to restrict the amount of sugar and things like that, did that come during or after your dental training, trying to say, hey, look, keep away from that sugar, darling, it's not a good thing?
Look, in my years of dental school, we were certainly taught about the influences of sugar and dental health. So, you know, there's actually an item number where you can, if you've had a consultation about nutrition or diet with your patient, you can use that item number to basically describe that service that you've given them. And essentially it's a big part of dentistry. It's well understood that it's not just teeth, and teeth are just, they're not just separate entities from the rest of your body. They're well connected to the rest of your body, and heavily influenced by how you are on the inside. And that's obviously why if people are eating healthy, they've got great nutritional supplementation from the variety of foods they're eating, and certainly if the person or individual can absorb those nutrients well and utilize them in their body, they're going to be very healthy individuals. They'll have the best chance of having a good immune function, as well as obviously developing good, strong teeth. One of the issues that I've come across with regarding fluoridation is, and belief systems, that belief that was developed that, and certainly still exists among a lot of the older generations, I find, with my patients, that they believe that without fluoride, they will have dental decay. And what was poorly understood in the past was that if you don't have those essential building blocks such as calcium and phosphate available, then your teeth can't maintain health. Fluoride, you can have as much fluoride as you like in your mouth or teeth exposed to fluoride, but without those essential building blocks to actually build tooth structure, fluoride can't do anything. And I'm talking about what happens when your teeth are in the mouth ready for use. So after they've been fully developed and after they're and they're visible and being used. So when that's the case in life, and we're all taught to brush our teeth, hopefully, fluoride doesn't necessarily have to be there. However, if it is there, it is meant to help catalyze that reaction of incorporating calcium and phosphate into the tooth structure at a very, very microscopic level. That's the whole point of it. And that's topical, you know, external surface application use of fluoride. Without those building blocks that I'm talking about, calcium phosphate being present, that fluoride or fluorine ion can't do anything. It won't have any effect whatsoever. It might disable enzyme functions and kill some bacteria. However, it's not going to build tooth structure by itself. And that's what seems to be very poorly understood by the layperson, obviously, and also even depending on when or how someone has studied that aspect of dentistry as well. There is a lot of new products now in dentistry which help remineralize tooth structure, and they're calcium phosphate amorphous type matrices that also employ the use of a protein called casein, and that's a dairy protein which has been found to really help with that process of remineralizing tooth structure. And that's where a lot of people who suffer acid erosion or a lot of wear on their teeth and they have sensitivity, they benefit quite a bit from these products, which allow for, you know, a large amount of calcium and phosphate to be available for them to remineralize and build tooth structure microscopically. So,
you know, Vinny, before you talk, Paul, I just wanted to address one issue here. Is the I want it to be easy. I don't want to have to think a whole lot. I don't want to have to make an effort kind of response to this. Because if we don't have fluoride automatically in the water going down the drains when we're having a shower and going through our washing when we're cleaning it in the washing machine and getting all over our dishes and everything like that and not getting on our teeth, then what else are we going to do? How could we possibly have a better alternative than dumping toxic waste into the water supply for it to be good for my teeth? Help, please, without thinking or making any effort, give me a solution.
Yes.
Yes. Paul has a solution. Yeah. We talked about it last night.
I forgot what that was, but I do want to just underline one big, huge that goes on in New Zealand and in other countries where people are busy promoting. The big lie is if you don't have fluoride, you're going to have kids having teeth removed under anesthesia, young children removed, having their teeth removed under anesthesia, which is both expensive and traumatic. And you'll see dentists and promoters, health officials, holding up big pictures of these dreadful teeth. And let me explain what this is. More often than not, these dreadful pictures of teeth, which lead to extractions under anesthesia, are what are called baby bottle tooth decay. And this is what happens when a baby is allowed to suck on a baby bottle, a sippy bottle, for hours on end. Now, that bottle might contain sugared water, Ribena, Coca-Cola, milk, whatever. But if the baby is allowed to fall asleep with this for an hour on end, what it does is to rot the top teeth to the gums, the top teeth to the gum, especially if there's Coca-Cola in it, which is also acid, to the gum. Now, the giveaway, by the way, there's no difference in the rate of baby bottle tooth decay between fluoridated, non-fluoridated communities if there are the same income levels. You will see a difference between baby bottle tooth decay between low income families and high income families, because by and large in low income families the parents are so busy doing other things, getting a job, etc., 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 they don't have so much time, and that's when the baby bottle is left in the mouth. But if you take two low income areas, you'll find there's no difference in baby bottle tooth decay in the fluoridated and the non-fluoridated communities. So it's a lie. And the way that anybody can spot this lie, that when a dentist is holding up a case of baby bottle tooth decay, is to look at the bottom teeth. The top teeth look awful, awful, rotted to the gums in many cases. Bottom teeth are hardly touched because the tongue, during this sipping process of the baby bottle, protects the bottom teeth. And you know, this is how propaganda works. In Queensland, Australia, the day before the Queensland government voted for mandatory fluoridation, every MP was sent a postcard. And on that postcard, it had four pictures. It had a picture of what teeth looked like of a child that drank fluoridated water. Perfect. And then center two, you had a top. You had two photographs, one from the side, one from the top, of pictures with baby bottle tooth decay. And the legend was, this is what happens when children drink non-fluoridated water. Utter propaganda. And then on the right-hand side of the card, you had a baby having tooth extracted under anesthesia. So an absolute concocted garbage propaganda going to every MP before they voted for mandatory fluoridation. But I've seen it elsewhere. I've seen dentists and I've seen health officials hold up these baby bottle tooth decays, real fear-mongering. They say that we're fear-mongering. You know, what's frightening is this kind of activity from civil servants. When civil servants step over from providing objective information to decision makers to being outright propagandists, that's what's scary.
Well, they're also trying to essentially tar us with a brush. Aldous Huxley had this really great quote. The propagandist's purpose is to make one set of people forget that certain other sets of people are human.
Yeah.
And indeed. I saw this the truth is the first thing to die in wartime, and I've come to the conclusion that we're currently in a form of silent war. On many different fronts, fluoridation, for my money, is a major front of this silent war, but I think that it occupies a very prominent place in the central part of what happens in society when people stop asking questions, start obeying authority without question, become essentially, just like science becomes a slave when it doesn't stick to its guns, the people become slaves when they're no longer informed as to who's running their society, why, and how. And it appears to me that it's an assault, like a war crime, essentially, right? Like, isn't it a war crime to poison an enemy's water supply, right? Is it too extreme to put it in those terms?
It's a civil war. It's a civil war between the government and the people, I think. Civil war. If you turn to another subject, I'm not against vaccination in principle, but let me just, I heard a very, very excellent presentation by Robert J. Kennedy Jr., who is an environmental lawyer, who's very, very concerned about mercury. He's had many successful lawsuits on mercury. And he was intrigued to begin with how the different regulatory bodies were handling mercury in the United States. From an environmental point of view, the EPA is very, very concerned about levels of fluoride, about mercury in fish. And their concern is that the pregnant woman shouldn't eat these mercury-containing fish because they give the mercury to the baby. Well, if you look at the levels of methylmercury in those fish and the doses that the EPA is concerned about, those doses a few years ago were dwarfed by the levels of mercury in vaccine, thimerosal, that babies were being injected 30 or 40 vaccines in the first few months of their lives, and the total amount of thimerosal, ethyl mercury, being injected to the baby was much, much higher than the EPA was concerned about in fish and what people ate.
And then when they went on from that, when they went on from that, they said, oh, we're no longer adding fluoride as a mercury as a preservative in the vaccines afterwards. So they just put it in the production process in the first place before they added the preservatives and just left it in there anyway. You know, just that cynical sort of lying sort of crap that you were up against.
You talk about cynical. Let's compare this. You know, when we stop using leaded gasoline because of the toxicity of lead tetraethyl, we did that because we were frightened of the damage done to children's IQ. But it didn't stop the manufacturers like Ethyl Corporation near Ellesmere Port near Liverpool continuing to produce the lead tetraethyl and exporting it to third world countries. So even though we knew it was going to damage those children's brains, we kept exporting it. Now, with apparently what Robert Kennedy said, is that the supplies of the thimerosal in the vaccines are now being exported to third world countries. Again, even though we know that those babies should not be injected with thimerosal, they're still being exported to third world countries. Again, this is evil. That is evil when you know that it's going to do harm. It's what we didn't know going to do harm. Now that we know, that is evil. And I think another thing which really pricked my ears up, his description of the Center for Disease Control was a cesspool of corruption, a cesspool of corruption. This is the same CDC that has a white coat and promotes fluoridation in the United States and is being quoted every day somewhere in the world by some health official or dentist or doctor or editor saying the Center of Disease Control in the United States says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. A cesspool of corruption when it comes to vaccines and the white-coated promoter of fluoridation when it comes to fluoride.
And as I like to say, it's all about what they hoped to achieve.
Yep. But one more scientific thing. The science must rescue us. I mean, for Robert Kennedy, he said he wanted to be a scientist before he was a lawyer. So he's always respected science, uses science in his cases, and he says, if I didn't use the science properly, I wouldn't win those cases. One of the things that the promoters of the use of thimerosal in vaccines is that it's rapidly metabolized, and that has been seen by many people as why they claim that ethyl mercury is less toxic than methyl mercury. Ethyl mercury is thimerosal, okay? What Robert Kennedy explained is, yes, it is rapidly metabolized, but they don't find the mercury in the urine. It's metabolized rapidly, and guess where the mercury goes to? Into the brain. And so that, well, I'm a little off topic here, but well, not in the sense
that's of... That's what the Vinnie Eastwood show is for, going a little off topic. Okay, well, speaking of which, we only have a minute or so to wrap up the broadcast, so I'd like to get a couple of things from you guys, you know, your relevant website so people can go and see more of your work and whatnot, and also maybe just like a one-minute recap of what this new law is being passed in New Zealand and what people should do to get more information about it, so on, that kind of thing.
Well, what they should do about it is to get hold of their MP immediately as a matter of extreme urgency and tell the MP not to vote for this parliamentary bill. Yes, and also to especially talk to the Green Party. I understand. I can't believe this. I cannot believe this. But the Greens support this bloody bill for mandatory fluoridation. Now, if you told me the Conservatives, the Liberals, and all those other people support it, probably wouldn't knock me over. But the Greens, if the Greens support this, they've lost any relevance as far as I'm concerned. I also believe they support 1080 from helicopters to kill possums. What has happened to the Green Party? What dark shade of brown have they become? I just can't believe this. I've talked to Green Party members in the past. And this is absolutely, utterly disgusting. So write your MP and tell the Green Party, if they vote for this, never, ever support the Green Party again.
And Maria, final words?
Well, I wanted to also mention that sugar has a big influence on dental health, in that a lot of people seem to not be aware of how that works in as far as someone's dental health is concerned. But essentially, when you have a lot of sugar available, it will allow for more bacteria to breed, and they metabolize the sugar to produce acid, which is essentially what demineralizes teeth and creates these cavities. Sugar is a big problem in our world, first world, and it is something that is being tackled today, and that's what I'm really happy to see. There are movements happening in Australia, especially in the dental fraternity, where they're trying to educate people about sugar, especially the hidden sugars, food that say fat-free, but they've got very high sugar in them, and educating especially parents, you know, how to feed their children better so that they can avoid overdosing them with sugars. But yeah, New Zealand, I really hope that this beautiful country, the first time I've ever been here, it's a stunning country, and it's got so much to offer. It's probably one of the last places on earth that's clean and green. I would hate to see it destroyed by those horrible, deadly sins such as greed and selfishness and mismanagement and stupidity. I'd hate to see it destroyed by that. Well, so I would like people to have a say and vote against fluoridation and put it to rest. There are far better ways to manage the byproducts of the phosphate fertilizer industry.
And if I may, you did mention websites. We have the fluorideaction.net. Make sure you spell fluoride correctly, F-L-U, fluorideaction.net. The first three mastheads are, one, a paper that I've co-authored with Bill Hersey, which quantifies the risk posed by fluoride as far as lowering of IQ. The numbers come down to the following: 1.4 milligrams per day lowered the IQ of children in one Chinese study by 5 IQ points. 1.4 milligrams per day. That's about 1.5 liters of fluoridated water would lower the child's IQ by 5 IQ points. That's very, very serious finding. Secondly, there's a videotape, a 20-minute videotape that you can view on our website from my son, Michael, who explains that the IQ studies are the tip of the iceberg, and he explains all the animal studies, learning experiments, behavioral experiments, etc., and other human studies other than IQ studies. He explains all that in a 20-minute videotape. And finally, the third item on our mastheads is the petition that we have submitted to the EPA, the US EPA, last November 2016, calling upon the EPA to stop the deliberate addition of fluoride to the drinking water based upon its neurotoxicity. And I'm sad to tell you, well, there's good news and bad news. I'm sad to tell you that the EPA has rejected our petition. It did so the day I arrived in Australia, February the 17th. However, superficially, of course, absolutely superficial, didn't mention the heart of our analysis, the key part of the analysis, which led to that number, 1.4 milligrams per day, etc. But the other thing was that basically, they were saying they rejected all the studies and said they haven't done studies in the United States. So what they're saying is that, as far as the EPA is concerned, nothing counts. Nothing counts if you don't do the studies in the United States. That's kind of a weird way of looking at science. And, of course, it's a catch-22, as the authorities in the United States, the health agencies, have no interest in doing those studies, just as they have no interest in doing studies in Australia and New Zealand on health, on bones, on arthritis, on thyroid function, on IQ studies, and so on. So it's really pathetic. But the good news is that they rejected our petition on its merits, which means that we can take them to federal court, and we intend to take them to federal court. So stay tuned, Vinny.
Oh, I love that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this broadcast where you get the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the tooth. So help me, God. The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes. And if you would like to support this broadcast and the people that we give a platform to and that kind of thing, go to the homepage of thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a regular subscription payment through that PayPal, a few dollars a month or a dollar a week or whatever you can spare. There's the Patreon as well. So if you donate through that one or through the Kiwi Bank or anything, send me an email through the website and I'll add you to our exclusive little Vinny Eastwood Show Facebook group where I will put up the video edits of the radio shows and things like that early for you just to say thanks for supporting me and then helping everybody else. It's like Dr. Phil show, you know, let me help you help somebody else help themselves. And alright, that's how it goes, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Paul Connett and Maria Claudianos, thank you very much for your time. And you have one more thing to say, Paul, don't you?
I was just going to say, you should be on Monty Python, or at least you should have a new version of Monty Python, Vinny. You're very good.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, it's just wonderful when somebody gives me a fantastic compliment like that.
Well, we could do a whole Monty Python program on fluoridation. No, John, what have we got to do with this this toxic waste from the phosphate fertilizer industry? I can't dump it into the sea, John. Well, and it can't dump it locally. It's too concentrated.
I know, John. Put it in the drinking water.
Oh, yes. What a good idea.
Repeat it.
Just a little bit of a time. Nobody will know the difference. And they'll get slightly dumber over time, so they really won't know the difference.
Absolutely disgusting.
That's freaking fantastic. All right. We're in an anarcho-syndicalist commune, and we allow different people to fluoridate the drinking water every other week. Okay, guys, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for your service. Like really, really, I don't say this enough. I don't say it to my audience enough. I don't say it to my guests enough. But just thank you for being who you are and doing what you do, because there's nobody else but you.
That's sweet. We do what we can. We do what we can, and it's for me the exciting thing. And you've heard me say this, Vinny. I know you heard me say it in Auckland last time. It's the people that you talk to, the people that you meet, the people that are actively engaged in this issue and other issues. That's what keeps me going. If we're going to get any positive change on this planet, it's going to have to come from the grassroots. It's not going to come from the top downwards. It's got to come from the people upwards, whether you're talking about waste or whether you're talking about opposition to something like fluoridation. And it really is a remarkable network of people around the planet.
All right. And unfortunately, that's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for your time. And we'll see you again another time.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.